Okay, we're beginning here at the bottom of Pei Vav and Bet. The Gemara is discussing the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda believes that with regards to a Suma, in lo boshet, and we learned from the Brito that it's not only that in lo boshet, but Rabbi Yehuda has a much broader scale of items by which the Suma is patur from. And we saw in those Brito that Suma is patur from boshet, he's patur from chayve galiot, chayve malkiot, chayve mitot beitin, and we learned all of those limudim yesterday. And now we have a tiny idoch of a Brito that says, Rabbi Yehuda omer Suma in lo boshet, which is a position that we know of Rabbi Yehuda. V'chein haya Rabbi Yehuda potro mikol dinim shibetorah. And now we have a much broader scale of exemption that is given to the Suma based on Rabbi Yehuda, which is that a Suma is patur from all the dinim shibetorah. My time with the Rabbi Yehuda. What's the reasoning behind Rabbi Yehuda's position with regards to a Suma? Damakra, v'shaftu ha'ida ben ha'makeh u'ben gol ha'adam ala mishpatim ha'ila. That they will adjudicate between the individual who committed the murder and the gol ha'adam based on the mishpatim ha'ila to determine whether the murderer is deserving of the death penalty or he should be sent to galut. Anybody who is relevant with regards to the murder and the gol adam has relevance in all the other mishpatim. Anybody who is not relevant with regards to these matters is not relevant by the mishpatim. And we already established yesterday that the Suma is patur from galut, and he's also patur from chayvei mitot beitin, and therefore the Suma has no relevance by the Makah and the Goel Adam, and so therefore he will also have no relevance with regards to the Mishpatim, or in essence he is patur from the Mishpatim. Tosafot asks over here, once Rabbi Yehuda establishes that a Suma is patur mikol ha-mitzvot, then why do you need to have the statement that a Suma ain't no boshet, that there's no din of boshet with regards to a Suma who is mibayesh? Because you already captured that in the statement that as Suma is patur mikol mitzvot shebetorah. So Tosafot gives two possibilities as to answer that question. One possibility is that the gzeir shava of einecha from which we learned boshet was Rabbi Yehuda's original position. And then as he came up with limudim that expanded the scope of the exemptions or the patur of the blind person, he no longer needed that limud of einecha. So that was his initial stage or his initial drasha. But in Ochanami, once he expanded the drasha to say that he is patur mikol mitzvot, we no longer needed this einecha. Then Tosfot offers a second alternative, which is that even with the knowledge that the Suma is patur mikol mitzvot, there's a possibility that you would have thought that the midrash of Rabbi Meir, who argues there on Rabbi Yehuda, would have been the correct understanding of the pasuk, and therefore we do need the drasha of einecha to tell us that a Suma is patur. So once we know that the Suma is patur, then we can expand that to galut and to other areas, because there is a precedent or a paradigm that Suma is patur. And so what Tosafot says is that the establishment of the fact that a Suma is patur by boshet allows us then in other situations where we're determining whether we should learn like Rabbi Meir, who says that a Suma is chayav in galut, versus Rabbi Yehuda, who thinks he's patur, that gives more impetus to the shita of Rabbi Yehuda, even though Rabbi Meir's shita seems more logical, because we do have a paradigm of this idea that a Suma is patur. Therefore, Tosafot says we need these as building blocks to get to the greater exemptions of a Suma being patur mikol ha-mitzvot. Now, Tani Yidach, we have another brayta, Rabbi Yehuda Meir, Suma in lo boshet, v'chein haya Rabbi Yehuda potro mikol ha-mitzvot amurot b'torah. Again, another brayta. And this is more supportive of Tosafot's second explanation, because the Braita seems to put these two matters together, which says that the Suma is patur from boshet, and he's also patur mikol mitzvot ha-Torah. Seemingly it's resting upon that idea that the Suma ain't no boshet. So, Amar Rav Shisha Braid Rav Yidi, my time with Rav Yehuda. Amar Kron, the Pasuk says, Ve'elu ha-mitzvot ha-chukim v'ha-mishpatim. Ko she'eshno b'mishpatim. Anybody who has relevance by the mishpatim, Yeshno b'mitzvot v'chukim. He has relevance by the mitzvot and the chukim. V'cho she'enu b'mishpatim, enu b'mitzvot v'chukim. Anybody who's not relevant by the mishpatim is also not relevant by the mitzvot and the chukim. And that provides us the Ptur. Now, he's not relevant by the Mishpatim because we already established that he is Ptur from the Mishpatim, from the previous Bright of Rabbi Yehuda, or from the explanation as to my time at the Rabbi Yehuda, what was the reasoning behind Rabbi Yehuda. So this seemingly builds on top of that and expands the exemption from Mishpatim even to Chukim and Mitzvot. It's not just with civil matters, but all matters of the Torah that the Suma is Ptur. So Amar Rav Yosef, so now we have the famous statement of Rav Yosef. We saw it back in the Gemara in Kiddushin. Rav Yosef, who fell ill in the middle of his life, and because of that illness, forgot much of his learning from the earlier part of his life, and his student Tobias always reminding him or helping him to remember what he had learned or said before. But he also was impaired by that illness, and he was blind from seemingly at that point forward. And so Rav Yosef now is commenting on this sheet of Rav Yehuda. So I'm Rav Yosef, Rav Reish, Havam, you know. In the beginning, I used to say, Man damar locha ke Rav Yehuda. Whoever said the locha is like Rav Yehuda, damar suma putar patur min a mitzvot. It says the suma is exempt from the mitzvot. Kavidna yom tovu the rabbonon. I would make a party for them, or for all the rabbonon, or for the Beit Midrash. My time, huh? The lo mefgedina v'ka abdina mitzvot. I wasn't commanded to do it, and yet I was voluntarily opting in to doing the mitzvot. So at first I thought that that was the better scenario or situation, and therefore anybody who told me the halacha was like Rabbi Yehuda, I would make a party for them. Hashta de shamit lahad Rabbi Chanina. Once I heard this memra of Rabbi Chanina, dam Rabbi Chanina gadol mitzuveh ve'oseh, memi she'eno mitzuveh ve'oseh. Greater is the one who's commanded to do it and does it. Versus someone who's not commanded to do it and still does it. Now, the person who tells me the halacha is not like Rabbi Yehuda, which means that I'm mitzuveh in the mitzvot, abdina yamatov le rabbonon. Then I'll make a party for the rabbonon and for the Beit Midrash. My time, huh? Because if I'm commanded to do it, then I get more reward for it because then I am a mitzuveh ve'oseh. So this is a famous Gemara from Kiddushin. We discussed it much more in detail there in the Gemara in Kiddushin about the fact that when it's mitzuveh ve'oseh, there is more reward for it versus the case she'enu mitzuveh ve'oseh. So before we discuss that, there's just an interesting Maritz Chiyut over here. He makes two comments with regards to this Gemara, which are important in terms of gaining perspective. He says, first of all, even according to one who says the Suma is patur from kol mitzvot, that's only from positive commandments. When it's talking about negative commandments, he for sure is chayav. Because for what reason would a Suma be permitted to eat chaylev? Or for what reason would a Suma be permitted to violate any of the lotases in the Torah? It's one thing to say that he doesn't have to actively engage in the mitzvot aseh, but why should that permit him then all of a sudden to violate the mitzvot lo taseh? So the Maritz Chiyut takes a position here that this is only true with regards to mitzvot aseh, not with regards to mitzvot lo taseh, similar to the structure of a woman who is turah from mitzvot aseh, there's shazman grama, but she's always chayevet with regards to mitzvot lo taseh. And the Maritz Chiyut sees that being the same model that we would use by a Suma. And in one second it will explain why he's questioning the Balei Tosafot with regards to this. The second thing that he says over here is, the quotes from Ayin Shittu Mekubetzet, Vi V'Shem Rav HaMe'iri B'Midrashot, Amru, Kol HaPatur Min HaDavar V'Oseu Nikra Hejot. The quote from, he says it's Yerushalmi later on, the Maritz Chiyut, that anybody who does something which they don't have to do, meaning that they do these chumrot, or they add on additional items which they're not chayavin, that person is called a hejot. Hejot here, it means like a lay person, but not in the sense of a positive sense. A lay person means that he's a fool to do that. But davar zeh inu rak b'davar, shekol hayotze b'zeh oseh patur mimenu. It's only true when somebody does something and they're otherwise exempt from it. Ve'inu davar sheyotze mimenu sechel o musar o silsul o hachnat alei v'kiyot b'zeh. And there's no benefit to the individual from doing this. In that the person simply adding on chumrot without any material, without any benefit from the accomplishment of the mitzvah. That doesn't have to be just because you're doing a mitzvah, but the mitzvah has to have some value, whether it's an intellectual value, whether it's a musar, it's a value in terms of morals, it's a value in terms of being magdir, the person holding them in a certain framework, or it's helpful in terms of the person being having humility. So all those are positive aspects of doing something. And so he says that we would limit the idea that when you add on things that you're not chayavin, that's not considered to be praiseworthy. That's only true when there's no value in what they're adding on. He just makes up these mitzvot that he's adding on, which are not really mitzvot. Ad kan lishono. That's what he quotes from the Shita Mekubetzet of the Me'iri. I brought the Ma'ariv at first because he's very interesting, because first of all, he differentiates between mitzvot aseh and mitzvot lo taseh. And he also differentiates between taking upon yourself mitzvot that have value or practices that have value versus just stam taking on practices or making up things or adding mitzvot that have no toelet or no benefit to the individual. Now, he's really speaking in the context of the Balei HaTosafot over here, because the Balei HaTosafot make two comments that are very important. The first of which is the Balei HaTosafot say, why is the Suma different than the woman? Because when it comes to a Suma, the Balei HaTosafot are convinced that a Suma is Chayav in the Mitzvot Midrabanan. And that is because he quotes a Gemara that says that Rabbi Yehuda believes that with regards to a Suma, a blind person, Lo Yifros et HaShma. That he should not be the one who makes the brachot that are associated with the Shema, because included in those brachot are the bracha on the me'orot, on the lights, or the constellations, those things that provide us the visibility for us to conduct our lives. And since he can't see or he's blind, it would be inappropriate for him to lead the services or to be the one making that bracha. Over there, Rabbi Yehuda differentiates between a suma that is congenital from birth or was always in a place where it was dark and he never had exposure to light, versus a case of a suma who at once had the ability to see lights and then lost that capability. So Rabbi Yehuda makes such a differentiation. Rabbi Yossi, who we paskin like, says that even for a suma who's congenitally blind, still the benefit of the me'orot, based on a mashal that he brings down, that people will always help out the suma. I mean, that the suma was walking through the street with an avuka. Rabbi Yossi asked him, why are you walking with an avuka? You can't see anything. He says, because then other people will see me and help me to avoid the pitfalls that are out there. So that there's a benefit to the suma of the lights, not necessarily to him himself inherently, but because other people would use the light to help him out. So that's how we pass in Rabbi Yossi. But even Rabbi Yehuda, who says that the Suma can't be Poreis El HaShma, he differentiates between a Suma who's never seen light versus a Suma who has seen light. Tosafot says, over here in our Gemara, it makes it sound like Rabbi Yehuda believes that a Suma is Patur Mikol HaMitzvot. He's completely Patur Mikol HaMitzvot. So how could he lead the services? How could he be the one who's Motzi the Rabbim if he's not Chayav? So Tosafot claims that a Suma is Chayav Midrabanan in the Mitzvot. There are two chidushim in the fact that a suma is chayavet in a mitzvot. The first of which is, Tosafot says, why isn't then a woman chayavet in the mitzvot midrabanan? Here you have a suma who's otherwise patur min a mitzvot, and you're claiming that the chachamim added in a mitzvot derabanan that he is chayavet in the mitzvot. So why don't we say the same thing by a woman who is turah min mitzvot taseh she hazman gramah? Let us say that there's a mitzvot derabanan for her to do the mitzvot taseh she hazman gramah. So Tosafot says there's a big difference. Because a suma, if he was patur min a mitzvot, he would have no mitzvot that he is chayav in. He would otherwise be a nachri, or a goy, because he has no chiyuv in the mitzvot, and he would not have anything that defines him or differentiates him as a Jew. Therefore, the chachamim instituted or made it that he is chayav in the mitzvot, midrabanan. A woman, even though she's turah from mitzvot to seisha as man grama, she still has a cadre of mitzvot where she is chayavet, including mitzvot to seisha as lo as man grama, all those exceptions to the rules, all the mitzvot lo taseh. So Tosafot says that's one distinction between a woman and a suma. This is where the Maariv Chiyut asks this question. I'm not sure if Tosafot's right, because a suma should be chayav in the mitzvot lo taseh. So therefore he is differentiated from others. He does have mitzvot, which he has to abide by. He does have laws, which distinguish him. But it might be that Tosafot either disagrees with that point of the Maariv Chiyut, or it could be that Tosafot is looking for positive commandments that he's chayav in. A woman is chayevet in mitzvot aseh lo azman grama, or other cases where there are exceptions to the rule. So she also has not only abstaining from the negative commandments, but has positive commandments to do. The suma would have no positive commandments to do, and maybe that's what Tosafot is focused on. Therefore, he says there's a chiyuv derabanan. The second thing he says is that even though the suma is chayav midrabanan, it can be motzi de kahal, because the whole chiyuv is only a chiyuv midrabanan. And so therefore, I suma, who is chayav mid rabbanan, can be motzi the cow, who is also chayav mid rabbanan. And Tosvot here distinguishes between a suma and a katan. This is important. Tosvot over here references to Erevin, but it also is found in the Gemara and Megillah and Brachot. It's a machlok between Rashi and Tosafot. But Tosvot has an opinion that a katan cannot be pores al hashma because a katan only has a mitzvah of chinuch, and therefore it becomes what he calls otherwise a trade derabanan. It's a double derabanan. He's only chayav in the mitzvot because of chinuch, and then the mitzvah itself was only a din derabanan, and so therefore we're involved in what's called trade derabanan. And since you're dealing with trade derabanan, he can't be motzi someone else who is chayav in a single derabanan, as opposed to the suma, whose chiyuv midrabanan is singular with the requirement of the Rabbanan. And Tosfot over here differentiates and says that he's not subject to that din of trade the Rabbanan, and he can be motzi the kahal. Part of that reason is what he says over here, states over here, because otherwise the suma would have no connection. The other part of this is that the mitzvah of chinuch, what exactly is the obligation with regards to the mitzvah of chinuch? Is it really that you're chayav in that particular mitzvah? Or is it a chayav that he be trained in the mitzvah, and therefore there is this step back, or an extra stage of chiyuvim midrabanan, which does not allow the katan to be motzi derabim? Those are the two things that the Balei Tosafot note over here, which are important. Now going back to the core of the Gemara here, about mitzuvah va'osa, why is it that a mitzuvah va'osa is rewarded more than someone who is enu mitzuvah va'osa? The Balei Tosafot back in the Gemara in Kiddushin say that it's simply because the Yetzer Hara plays on an individual. That when you're told to do something, it's true of kids, it's true of almost anybody, psychologically, when you're told you have to do something, or you must do it, people tend to rebel against that, or want to be freed of those shackles. They want to make their own decisions. If you're told to do something, then all of a sudden there's this big Yetzer Hara not to listen to whatever you're being told. And that Yetzer Hara is what gives the person who's mitzuveh ve'osa the greater reward, because of that fact that he is mitzuveh. And that causes the Yetzer Hara to play on his mind and to convince him that he shouldn't be doing this, so he doesn't have to do these mitzvot. There are those that want to qualify this mitzvah v'osa aspect of it that's only true by mitzvot sichliot, which are mitzvot that are logical or make sense. So over there, we can say, or we can invoke the principle that Tosafot says, is that when you're commanded and forced and locked into doing something, it's much more difficult to bring yourself to do it because of the fact that you're locked in and you have no choice. But when we're talking about mitzvot that are not necessarily mitzvot sichliot or mitzvot that are logical, there you could argue that enu mitzuveh ve'osa might be of an equal reward as a mitzuveh ve'osa, because over there, the fact that you're not commanded and there's no logic to perform or to comply with that mitzvah, the fact that you do it, already that makes it something that is on a higher level, because the only reason you're doing it is because there is such a commander, there is such a mitzvah. And so there are those that want to argue that you could differentiate between mishpatim or mitzvot sichliot versus chukim or mitzvot that are just a tzivoy Hashem, like shatneis, like other types of mitzvot where there's no logic necessarily behind them, that there may be even an any mitzvah vose is on the same level as a mitzvah vose. Alright, next Mishnah. Zechomer ba'adam mibishor. So now here, this is really a Mishnah which is summarizing much of what we've seen throughout the Masechta, some of it earlier in the Masechta, some of it in this Perek. But really it's the contrast between chavala, which is injury of an individual, versus monetary damages that were done, and the differences in the halachot between them. So chomer ba'adam mibishor, sh'adam mishalem nezek tzar ripoy shevet u'boshet, that the Adam pays the chamishad varim, umishalem dmei vladot, and he also pays for a miscarriage, if he causes a miscarriage in a woman. Mishor, enu mishalem, mishor does not pay ela nezek, except only pays for damage, because we said before it's ish be'amito, v'lo shor be'amito, and so therefore the din of the chamishad varim is only applicable to an Adam, not applicable to a shor. And he's also patur midvei vladot, he's also exempted for causing a miscarriage, because over there we learned anashim velo shvarim. So these are again limudim from earlier in the Masechta that we saw, that say that when your possession does the damage, it's only a din in nezek, there's no din of dmei vladot, when the Adam himself does this, then he's chayav in the Chamisha Dvarim, as well as he's chayav for causing a miscarriage. Hamakeh aviv et imo, v'lo asa ben chaburam, we just quoted this 2 days ago, that a person who injures their parent, but does not cause a chabura, does not cause a wound in the parent, v'chovel v'chaviro v'yom ha-kippurim, or someone who injures their friend on Yom Kippur, chayav v'kulan, is responsible for all of the Chamisha Dvarim, and we'll see the contrast in case where that is not true. A chovel be'eved ivri, someone who injures an eved ivri, chayav b'kulan, chutz min hashevet. He is responsible to pay for all of these with the exception of the unemployment, bizman shehu shelo, when the eved ivri is his. When the eved ivri is his, he owns him for his output or for his masa yadayim, and so therefore the shevet would belong to the adon anyway. So therefore he's exempt from paying the shevet, but he's chayav in all the other items. A chovel be'eved knani shel acherim, someone who injures an eved knani belonging to another owner, chayav b'kulan, is responsible for all of these items. Rav Yehuda Omer, ein la'avadim bolshet, that's something, again, we quoted back on yesterday's daf, that Rav Yehuda believes that avadim don't have a din in bolshet. Not that they're not embarrassed, not that there's not a value to their embarrassment, it's probably on a much lower level because of their standing in society, but still, they don't have the right to collect bolshet. Cheresh shoteh v'katan, b'giatan ra'ah, interacting with them, or having altercations with them, is to your detriment. Achovel ben chayav, if you do damage to them, you are responsible to pay. V'chem shechavlu b'acherim, turim. They who damage others are turim, because they are not b'nei dat. Since they're not b'nei dat, we can't obligate them for the damage that they're doing. Ha'eved v'isha, similarly, an eved k'nani and isha, b'giatan ra'ah. Again, altercations with them is also to your detriment. Achovel ben chayav, if you injure them, you are responsible. Heim shechavlu b'acherim, turim. But if they injure others, they do not have to pay. Now, in terms of their injuring others, it's not that they don't have to pay. They are b'nei dat, and they really should pay. The problem for both of them is that they don't have independent ownership. The eved knani is kosher kana eved kana rabo, so he has no independent possession with which to compensate the individual that he injured. And the same with the woman who's married. All of her assets are encumbered to her husband until her husband passes away or until she divorces her husband. And so therefore she has no ability to pay for this because of all the assets being encumbered to her husband. Avaho mishalmim lachar zman. But when they get older, then they should pay it back, or they pay it back because the ma'akev. So once they have ownership, then they should pay it or they're obligated to pay it. On the other hand, the cheresh shoteh v'katan, their p'tur stem from the fact that they lack da'at. And their lack of da'at is a p'tur that doesn't go away when they have possessions when they later on. The one exception that might be, you could argue that by a katan, maybe the katan can grow out of it, and maybe he would be responsible when he becomes a bar da'at for the injuries or the things that he did when he was younger. But if you really believe that he wasn't a bar da'at at that time, he was a minor, then even when he got older, maybe he would not be responsible to pay for it. If the woman is divorced, or the eved is set free, then they have to pay at that point, because now they have their own possession. So here's the contrasting case. If someone injures their parents, and there is a wound caused, or someone who injures their friend on Shabbat, patur mikulan, there you're exempt from all the chamisha dvarim, because both of those result in a death penalty. Injuring one's parents where there's a wound caused is subject to a death penalty. And same with doing chavalah, wounding someone on Shabbat is subject to a death penalty. We learned early in the Masechta from Tanit Bechizkiah that it might even be in cases of shogeg, it might even be in cases when there is no chiyuv mita, but because it could lead, or it's in the category of something that leads to a chiyuv mita, that one would be exempt from the monetary payments. Someone who injures his own eved knani, patur mikulan. He doesn't have to pay anything, because it's as if he's injuring his own possession. If it's his own possession, all the money or all the compensation would come back to him anyway. So if that's the case, he wouldn't have to make restitution to the eved knani, because it would all come back to the adon anyway. It'd be taken from his left hand and putting it into his right hand. Tosfot over here raises the issue, which is, vim tomar habrifuoto chayav. It says that in other places, in Shas, in the Gemara in Gittin, it seems to be that by an eved knani, you have to pay for his medical bills. You have to restore him to his former health. So why over here, in terms of the refu'ato, even if he's his own eved knani, he should still have to pay for the medical treatment of the Eved Klani, even though the other Arba'at Dvarim would go to the Adon. The Rufu'ah belongs to the Eved Klani because he has an obligation to ensure that he is treated medically. So Tosfot deals with the Gemara that seems to disagree with our Gemara. And then he says, Akoch Nira, Sheyesh Lechalek Ben Acherim Chuvlim Bo Ben Arav Atzmo Chuvel Bo Shevar Zachav Bako. That there's a differentiation between if he injures an Eved Klani that belongs to someone else versus his own Eved Klani. That if he injures an Eved Klani that belongs to someone else, then the refuah or the medical compensation does not belong to the Baal, but belongs to the Eved Klani, or it has to be used or utilized in order to cure the Eved Klani. Whereas it's his own Eved Klani, because he owns it up front and he never has to give it up, then he doesn't have to make that medical payment. Tosafot does toy with the idea, if you have the possibility of curing him in a faster manner, that is less expensive but more painful, that the Adon might have the right to make that decision for the Eved Klani. Meaning that he might be chayav in the refuah, but he also might be chayav in the refuah where he could take the shortcut and pay for it. And so that's what it means that goes to the Baal, that the refuah goes to the Baal, which is the excess amount that otherwise would have been paid to do it. The Baal can make a decision to have the Eved Klani do the fast cure, and he can keep the remainder of the money. So that might be how you answer the problem. Tosafot works with that a little bit as to explain why you would be chayav in the refuah, and part of it would go to the Eved and part of it would go to the Baal. But in the end, he has trouble with that because then that would be the case. We already have learned that out of our Mishnah. And then what is the Chiddush of Rabbi Yochanan and the Gemara in Gittin? Gemara now says, Bamini Rabbi Elazar Meirav, Hachuvel bebat ketana shel acherim. Someone who injures a young girl who is a minor, obviously, and another family, chavala lami, the damage or injury that is caused, the payment for that chavala, to whom does that belong? Mi aminan came into akni le'rachmana shevach ne'urim la'av, since the Torah gave the rights of the shevach ne'urim, all the benefits of her being a ne'ara goes or accrues to the father, chavala nami davu avi. So too, the monies for the payments of this injury would also belong to the father. My daima, da'af chata mikaspa. Because the chavalah caused a diminishment in her value, and that diminishment in her value is something that the father could have monetized. And now that that was taken away from him, he's the one who deserves the payments for the chavalah. Odilma shevach neurim hu da'akni le'rachmana, but maybe it's only the shevach neurim that the Torah gave to the father. Since if he wanted to give her over to whomever to marry, he could make that choice. And he can hand over to a mukeshchin, he can hand over to somebody terrible or awful to marry, he has that right. So since he has the right to do that, the kesef kiddushin belong to him. And that's why the shevach nurim are his. But here, of a chavalah, kevin di bay mitchabel ba lo matzi chavil, since if he wanted to injure her, he doesn't have a right to injure her, lo kanye le rachmano, the Torah did not give him the payment for that chavalah. And the reason by the ones and mefateh that those payments go to the father is because those are in lieu of the kesef kiddushin, which is his entitlement, as we saw before, that he has the ability to marry off to whoever he chooses. And so therefore those monies accrue to him. At the end of today's daf, we'll discuss the fact that that's true of the kesef kiddushin, but with regards to the other items like the tzar, the ripu, and the boshet, over there, maybe some of that does belong to the daughter and not to the father. The first thing is, it's clear to the Gemara, and I mentioned this before, that when it comes to Chavalah, that there's an Iser Doraita associated with Chavalah. And it's unlike Nezek, where we were searching and trying to find what was the source or what is the Iser Doraita. By Chavalah, it's a foregone conclusion that it's a sort to be Chovel and someone else. You can't just be Chovel and pay for it. And that's made clear here by the Gemara, that the father has no right to be Chovel in his daughter. And so therefore, he doesn't have entitlement to the payment of the Chavalah. That's one view. The other view is that no, kol shevach neurim, any benefit that comes from this girl belongs to the father. Now, Tosfot over here says that this is a misquote because shevach neurim comes from the parshia of Nidarim. And over there by Nidarim, it says, b'neureha beit aviha. And the Gemara dashes from that, kol shevach neurim la'aviha. Any benefit from while she's a ne'ara, while she's a minor, accrued to the father. Tosafot says, and the Gemara does this in a number of places, says that that's only said with regards to Nidarim. That's not a broad principle about what the father is entitled to. And Tosafot says that he thinks that the Gemara uses that as a code word. That it's not really meaning that they're darshaning Koshevach Nurim La'Avia, but rather it's a way of saying that we have different principles that we learn from different places that show us that the father's entitled to the benefits of the daughter. One of them, as Rashi quotes over here, is from Kiddushin. Since the father has the right to give his daughter over to whomever he chooses for Kiddushin, therefore it only makes sense that the Kesef Kiddushin belongs to him because he can give her away to the worst person in the world. So obviously there's reason to believe that the Kesef Kiddushin should go to him because he has control over the Kiddushin. By Emitzia, as Tosafot points out, we have a Gzeira because of Eva, that the father shouldn't have hatred or animosity towards the daughter if she finds these things and keeps this for herself while the father's taking care of her or supporting her. And so therefore we say that the mitziah goes to the father. So in each of these cases, there's a different reason as to why the father is entitled to those possessions of the daughter or those earnings of the daughter. And the Gemara just groups it or packages it under this idea of Shevach Neurim La'av. Not that they're really darshaning that pasuk that's found in Nidarim, but rather that's just a way to give you a headline that includes all these different items that the father is entitled to in his daughter. It says, it simply as an indication, and not because that's really where they're learning it from. Amarle, so he said back to him, this is Rabbi Elazar posing the question to Rav. Rav says back to him, Lo zachta Torah la'av elo shevach nurim belvad. He does not have entitlement to the chavalah. He only has entitlement to whatever is covered or under this category of shevach nurim. Rav's position is clear over here. Lo zachta Torah la'av elo shevach nurim belvad. Tosafot, we're going to see later on at the end of today's daf that Reish Lakish agrees with Rav's position, and Rabbi Yochanan argues on them. Now that's fine because those are all Amoraim, so you can have Rabbi Yochanan arguing on Reish Lakish, you can have him arguing on Rav. The problem is that there's a braita that explicitly supports the position of Rabbi Yochanan that the chavalah seems to belong to the father. And so then, what do you do with that braita? How are these Amoraim, like Rav and Reish Lakish, arguing in a braita that seemingly explicitly says that the chavalah goes to the father? Maybe let me clarify. Before that, he says, Mashma braita the chavalah de patza befanah havilah'av. From the braita, it sounds like if there was an injury to her face, that would belong to the father. How do we deal with that versus the statement here of Rav where the father is entitled to nothing, as well as Reish Lakish? So the Baal Tosafot give here two answers to deal with that. One is to say that Hacha nechaku b'chol pchita shenifchetet kol yameha b'pziah. The injury to the face, or the disfigurement of the face of the girl, is something that will last a lifetime for her. The father's rights to that only last until she is a bogeret, until she's up to the age of a ne'ara. So if the payment for the petza that happened to the face is for the present value of the lifetime of whatever that petza was, a portion of it belongs to the father, and a portion of it belongs to the child. And that's what Rav and Reish Lakish are arguing, is yes, the part of up to the zman of a ne'urim belongs to the father. But after that, it should go to the girl herself. Whereas Rabbi Yochanan says, since it happened when she was under the auspices of the father, it all accrues to the father. That's one way that Tosafot explains their machloket. Inami says, Hachabama she nifchata the kiddushin. Here we're talking about the value diminishment for her kesef kiddushin. Meaning that there's diminishment in her value, and that's a lifelong problem from this blow to the face, wound to the face, disfigurement. But there's also a loss of the Kesef Kiddushin. When it comes to marriage now, she's going to fetch less in terms of Kesef Kiddushin, and that would have accrued to the father. So that reduction in the Kesef Kiddushin, the father gets made whole for that Kesef Kiddushin, and the residual will belong to the daughter. The Sfir Le'Rav Reish Lakish Lo Zachei Le'Ela Kiddushin Mamash. That the father's entitlement, there's only to the Kiddushin, and nothing more. And therefore, whatever that diminishment amount is, the father will get, but after that, it all belongs to the daughter. And over there, it's talking about the bright daughter, it's talking about a case of hefsed maseyadah, the loss from her ability now to go out and work, because nobody's going to buy her. And so that belongs to the father. So what the Braita is speaking about is the lost Masei Yadayim, or value that could have been realized for a Masei Yadayim, that belongs to the father. Kesef Kiddushin belongs to the father. But then the remainder of the value diminishment from the disfigurement remains or belongs to the daughter. That's what Rish Lakish and Rav believe. Rabbi Yochanan believed that it all belongs to the father, again, because it happened during the period of time while she was under the auspices of the father. All right, so now the Gemara says, when it comes to the injury of an Eved Ivri, the individual is chayav to pay him for everything except the shevet. He doesn't have to pay him unemployment when he belongs to him, because that's what the Adon owns him for, the Masei Yadayim. And so then he doesn't have to pay for the loss of Masei Yadayim, because that's his, he owns it. So now that would be the same by a daughter. The father owns the Masei Yadayim of the daughter. Since he owns the Masei Yadayim of the daughter, he should be able to be compensated for it. Just like by the Adon and the Eved Ivri, the Eved Ivri shevet belongs to the Adon. So it's over here, by the Bito Aktana, the Shevet should belong to the father. And that's what Abai says. I'm Abai, Moderav B'Shevet. That when it comes to unemployment, that would accrue to the father, because the Masiyadayim of the daughter belong to the father until she becomes of age, until she is a Bugeret. Person who injures his son who is of age, he has to pay for that damage immediately. Bibno Katan, if it is a minor, and Josh, this goes to your question before, what do you do in terms of a minor? Yaselo skula. You basically create a trust for the child. So a segula is something that is precious. I would call it a long duration asset. And so you buy something that has stored value, that maintains its value, and is able to keep it for the child for the long run. The Gemara later on will ask, what is the best segula? In all likelihood, buying land would be the item that is the most efficient way to store value for the child. But many times, the money that's there is not sufficient to buy a parcel of land, and so therefore the Gemara will give other examples of what is considered to be a skula. Achovel v'bitok tana, patur. If one injures his daughter, who is a ktana, he is patur. Now, that doesn't make sense according to Rav. According to Rav, when the daughter is injured, the payments go to her, not to the father. That means that she's the owner of whatever the payments are. So now, if the father himself is the one who injures her, he should have to pay her because she is the owner of those payments. Not only that, that when the father does it, he is patur. But if other parties do it, the benefits or the payments from that accrue to the father and not to the daughter. So that would be against, again, what Rav says. My answer is, again, this is talking about unemployment. By unemployment, the father doesn't have to pay the daughter because it was his. He owned the Masei Yadayim. And if a third party injures the daughter, then he has to pay for the Masei Yadayim to the father, because the father is the owner of that output, of that leasehold in the girl's production. And so that belongs to the father. But that's it. It's limited to Shevet. Okay, now the Gemara discusses it. Is it really true when it comes to children who are of age that you give them the payment immediately? If a person injures other people's children, if they are of age, you pay them right away. You pay those individuals. If they are minors, then you make them a trust, like we said before, and you deposit the money so that they can get the benefit of it later on. Bibanav ubnotav shalo. If they are his children, Pator doesn't have to pay anything. So over here, the Braita does not differentiate between Gadol or Katan. It makes such a differentiation when it talks about Achirim. When it comes to his own children, there's no differentiation. He says Pator, the Gamre. How come the Braita before says when it comes to Benoa Gadol, that it gitain lo miyat, has to pay him right away, meaning that they're entitled to those payments and they get the money. And yet over here, he doesn't have to pay them. The Gemara says, "Ami lo kasho." That's not a problem. Kan kishesomuchim al shulchano, kan shein smuchim al shulchano. It really depends on the relationship between the father and the child. This goes to the Gemara that talks about a gadol and a katan. And over there is a machloket as the meaning of gadol and katan. But this, as Tosafot points out, seems to favor the position that says that a gadol over there doesn't literally mean gadol, an age, but rather independence. And a katan doesn't mean a minor, it just means someone who is dependent. And that's what the Gemara seems to make the distinction here. When they're smuchim al shulchano, when they are still dependent on the father, and they are being supported by the father, then the damage that is done to them would belong to the father, because they are like tanim in that case. Kan shein smuchim al shulchano. Here's a case where they are independent. And when they're independent, he would have to pay them. Tosfot points out over here that in all likelihood, the two brightot are only speaking about Shevet, about the unemployment, and the Somech HaShulchano, or Lo Somech HaShulchano, only impacts on that aspect of the Tashlumim of Shevet. The reason being that Tosfot says, if the brightot are not speaking about Shevet, then you couldn't differentiate between the brightot as to what they were speaking about. One was speaking about Shevet, and the other one was speaking about the other forms of compensation, and then you could explain why some go to the children and why some go to the father. Therefore, Tosafot concludes that it's speaking about Shevet Levad, and the two brightot are differentiated in Somech al Shulchano and Lo Somech al Shulchano. The Ramban, on the other hand, favors saying that this is all-inclusive, and that it's not just limited to Shevet, but to all forms of compensation here, that Somech al Shulchano will be the determining factor as to whether it goes to the father or goes to the child. So the first brightot, you said, what's the case there? B'shein smuchim al Shulchano. That's when they are not dependent on the father, they are independent. And that's why you have to pay the gadol miyad, you have to pay the child immediately, who's of age. Then what are you going to do with the latter part of that bright that it says, someone injures his daughter who is a ktana, is patur. Then they have to give it to the father. Wait a minute, he has to give it to her. She's independent, he's not supporting her. The Be'ina Mizone, she needs money to pay for her Mizonot. And if she lost her Masa Yadayim now, then she needs the money to make up for the fact that she doesn't have any Mizonot. So if you're talking about a case of children that are independent, then I don't understand the flow of the Braita. I understand that you have to pay the Beno Agadol immediately. You have to pay the Ben HaKatan with the Skula. But how come by Bito HaKtana, he is Patur? Or when someone else injures her, why is it accruing to the father and not to the child? Because the child is independent, and the child needs that compensation in order to survive. Vafilo l'man d'amar, and even according to one who says, Yechola rav lomar le'eved, that a master has the right to say to his eved, Kani, asei mi ve'en ezantcha, you work for me, and I won't feed you. Hani mili be'eved k'nani, that's only true about an eved k'nani, d'amar le avid avid ta kule yoma, you work for me all day. You should go, basically, and scrounge around and find what to eat. You can go around knocking on the doors, you can beg, you can find your own food. I mean, if you're allowed to make such a relationship, which is to stipulate that the Eved Kenani works for you during the day, and he'll have to make his own ends meet with regards to his food. That's only true of an Eved Kenani. But Eved Ivri, by the Eved Ivri, where it says, Ki Tov Lo Imach, that's from Sefer Dvarim, that he wants to stay on because Tov Lo Imach, he's having a good time with you. Imcha b'machal, imcha b'mishteh. He's on par with you when it comes to food and drink. And so therefore you have to treat him just like you treat yourself. But the Tosafot aren't convinced that Ki Tov Lo Imach is really the source for this. Because that Pasuk in Dvarim is, as he calls it, Sipur Dvarim. It's just telling you how he feels about the situation. But rather the Pasuk that teaches you that you must do this for him is the Pasuk in Vayikra, which says that Ki Toshav Yisachir Yeh Imach. That he'll be like a Toshav and Sakhir with you, and that Imach is a Tziboy, that he be like that with you, like a Toshav and Sakhir, and then you're responsible to ensure that his accommodations and his food are exactly like yours are. Tosafot then says, possibly you could explain that even though it's Sipur Dvarim, in Sefer Dvarim, that it actually is part of the Tziboy, because the Torah is telling you how he should feel. He should be feeling this, and why should he be feeling this? Because you're responsible to make him feel like that. But if that's the case, that in Eved Ivri, you're not allowed to make a deal where he works for you and you don't feed him, Koshkin Bito, certainly his daughter, he can't have such a relationship with. So it can't be a scenario where the Masa Yadayim belong to the father and the Mizonot are the child's problem, because then you would have argued, okay, the Masa Yadayim accrued to the father and that's why he's getting the payment. And the Mizonot are the child's problem. You can't have a relationship like that. They are integrally connected, the Mizonot and the Masa Yadayim. If that's the case, then the father should not be getting the payment here, but rather the child, because the child is independent. From the Gemara Ketubot, that the answer to the question is that sometimes there is more than just what's equal to the Masa Yadayim. Also over here, we're talking about the excess above her core or minimum masei yadayim for mizonot. So that hadafa, that excess amount, that belonged to the father rather than to the daughter, because the daughter just needs sufficient masei yadayim, which she owns on her own, to feed herself. So in that case, that's what we're talking about, where the father has rights to the hadafa. Now Gemara says, but my ukimta lebatraito. Now you set up the second bright as a case, b'smuchim al shulchanu, a case where they are dependent children. Gedolim itin lehem miyad, ketanim esi lehem sugula. Over there it says that the gedolim, you give it to payment right away, and the ketanim, you make for them a sugula. Amai, why are the children collecting here when there's a third party injuring them? Le'avihim by the mitzvah, it should go to the father. Amrei, ki kapid b'midi de chaser. B'midi ata mi'alma lo kapid. What we're going to say is that the father is not makpid on his children collecting monies when he suffers no loss. If he suffers a loss, then he's makpid on the fact that they get payments and that the payments should accrue to him and not to the children. But in a case where he suffers no loss, then when the payments come in and they go to the children, he's not going to be makpid on that, and he will allow them to keep those payments. And so that's why over here, even though the payments technically should belong to the father, but since the father really didn't suffer the loss, and more importantly, the child was the one who suffered the injury, then he's okay with them getting the compensation. What about the fact that a mitziah, which is not something that he loses anything on, and it's coming from outside, meaning it's a windfall of sorts, and so why over there is he makpid, and we say there that the mitziah goes to the father? So Amri Rav Chodekatilu Me'alma Velet Luhut Tzara Degufayu Begava Kopit. In a case where there is this windfall or this profit that comes to them from outside, not something that they worked for, and they have no pain, meaning there's no physical pain or injury to them, then the father is makpid that accrued to him or that go to him. He's supporting them. He's taking care of them. That mitziah should belong to him, because they did nothing for it. It landed in their lap. And number two is, they didn't suffer at all. There was no injury to them that you're compensating for. So in that case, the father says, that should accrue to me. That should come to me, because I'm supporting them. But when it comes to an injury, where they're the ones who bodily suffered the injury, and it's coming as a windfall from the outside, it's not something that otherwise belongs to him, lo kapit. There he's not makpid. It says, v'ha-ha-tam, d'itle tzara de gufa. In that case, the father is the one who collects. The father is the one who is the entitled party over there. There in the first braita, it says that when it comes to the injury to the daughter, where she's the one who suffered the tzara guf, and it's coming as a windfall in a sense, it's not something that was earned, and there we say it's makpid in order to accept, to retain those payments, or to those payments accrue to him. So if there's a chavalah to the daughter, then it's paid to the father. But again, the tzara, the gufa, is on the girl. The payment is coming from outside. It's not a loss that he suffered. So then why should he be makpid? Why should it accrue to him? It should go to the daughter. So that's true of ones mefateh. It's true of chavalah in all those cases. So amri hatam de gavra kabdonohu. Over there, where the guy is a miserly individual, he is parsimonious, he's not willing to support his own children, that they're not being supported by the father, he doesn't even have them at his own table, then that type of person is going to be makpid on anything that comes, and that's why you're going to have to pay him anything. And the other bright, where he's not makpid, how do you know he's not so miserly, how do you know that he's a more generous person, is because his children are being supported by him, and they are eating with him. Then he's makpid on things where there's loss involved. But things that come from the outside, he's not makpid on. All right, my skula. Now the Gemara says, what exactly was this skula? They buy him a Sefer Torah because they can use or utilize the Sefer Torah in the interim to learn from. So there's a benefit from that, but it's a long-lasting or long-duration asset because the Torah will maintain its value for the long run. Rabba bar Rav Huna amar dikla, you buy him a palm tree, da'acha minei tamre, because in the interim he can eat the fruits of the tree, but the tree itself is worth and will stay for a long time and have value or stored value for him in the long run. Now here, this is going back to the statement of Rab before, where he says, does it belong to the father of the Chabalah or not? Rav Shlokish agrees with Rav. The only thing that the Torah granted to the father is the Shevach Nurim. Again, Tosfot says that's a code word for Mitziah, Kiddushin, other things that either Midrabanan or Midoraita, the father's entitled to, but it does not grant him the right to Chabalah. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Afilu Ptziah. Even a Petza belongs to the father, meaning that he's disagreeing with Reish Lakish and Rav from before. Gemara says, Ptziah Sakadatcho? Ptziah, you think he's going to get? Afilu Rabbi Lazar lo kamivai lo Chabalah. Even Rabbi Lazar only asked about a Chabalah, where there's real injury to the individual, not simply a Petza, like a small wound or something that would pass, the afchata mikaspo, because then there's a diminishment in her value. And that diminishment in value is what you're paying for. Aval ptziah, the afchata mikaspa, when you're talking about a ptziah that doesn't have any long-term ramifications on her value, a ptziah where there is a wound which does not impede her functionality or ability to work, why should there be any payment to the father? What is the loss to the father in that scenario? Lo kami ba'ilei, that we don't ask about. Because the father has a right to sell his daughter as an ama hibriya. So therefore he can monetize her ma'aseh yadayim, and he can monetize her. So if that's the case, when there's a chavalah that diminishes her value, then there's really a loss that's caused to the father. But when you're talking about a ptziah that doesn't have that effect on the daughter, then even Rabbi Lozer doesn't have a question about that. He's not posing the question in that scenario, because it's clear there that the father has no entitlement to that. So Rabbi Yossi bar Chanina shepatz'a bifaneha ba'afchata mikaspa. Now the ptziah took place on her face, something that is visible, and has that disfigurement or that problem has long-ranging impact on her value. And so because of that, the father also has a vested interest over here, because again, he can't monetize, he can't collect, whether it's the Kesef Kiddushin, or he can't collect the value as her as an Amma Ivriya, because now she has a Petza on her face. And that diminishes the value, and something that the father can no longer garner because of this Tzi'ah. And that's why it belongs to the father. And again, Reish Lakish and Rav disagree with that, and say that the father doesn't get that entitlement. And we saw the Balei Tosafot before that tried to narrow the machloket here between Rav Reish Lakish versus Rabbi Yochanan because of the braita in the Gemara Ketubot, which seems to indicate that the chavalah, the patsa bifaneh, havila'av, which is supportive of Rabbi Yochanan's position over here, and Reish Lakish and Rav couldn't argue on that braita. And so in order to reconcile, he talks about whether they think it's the excess amount beyond her Yimei Ne'urim, or whether it's talking about the loss in value in her Kesef Kiddushin, or the loss in value of her Ma'aseh Yadayim, which the father owns, but other values beyond that would go to, or accrue to these individuals, versus Rabbi Yochanan, who thinks that it all has to do with when it happened. When it's under the auspices of the father, then it all goes or accrues to the father. It's clear here that when it comes to the tsar and the ripui, that belongs to the daughter, because she's the one who suffered the pain, and she's also the one who needs the medical attention. And therefore, those two parts of compensation definitely accrue to the daughter in order to provide for medical attention to her, as well as to the tsar that she underwent. The shevet definitely belongs to the father because he's the one who has the rights to the ma'aseh yadayim. It will be subject to the machloket that we saw between Rav Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan as to how far that goes in terms of the ma'aseh yadayim or the shevet. And the same will be true with regards to the nezek, which is that it will belong to the father for Rabbi Yochanan entirely, and for Reish Lakish and Rav up to a certain point or a certain level by which the father is fully compensated, but the remainder will belong to the daughter. Boshet is an area where there is a machloket in the Rishonim as to whether it belongs to the daughter or to the father. Does it belong to the daughter because she's the one who suffered the embarrassment? Or does the boshet go to the father because, like in cases of rape or seduction, where the father gets the compensation or payment because that's part of Shevach Ne'urim, or that's part of the payments of the Kiddushin. So that's the one area that the Rishonim disagree about as to whether the boshet accrues to the father because of Shevach Ne'urim, or does the boshet accrue to the daughter because she's the one who suffered the actual embarrassment or shame. Okay, we're going to stop here by the two dots on the top of Pechet Amud Aleph.